Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
We have a great guest. I don't want to leave him waiting. He's on the line, and he's done another book. And this one is the part two and three, My Final Words, and it's Trapped with Miss Arias. Kirk Nurmi, thank you for talking to us today.
Nice to be here with you guys.
So, Kirk, now where are you? Are you stuck somewhere, too, or are you out traveling around?
Well, I am home. I made my last trip before this kind of kicked into place. And being in Arizona, I'm also on lockdown. So I've been working out of my house, writing some fiction, and talking with great people like you about the new book.
Well, that's nice of you to say. I'm not that great, but... So you finally did this part two, three. You did it in one book rather than two. I wasn't sure you were actually going to ever do this book. But it didn't seem to me like you were really that keen on it when I was, you know, when I saw you last. So that was quite a while ago. What made you go through with it?
Well, there was a lot of personal growth and issues going on maybe behind the scenes, just to refresh people's memory, or maybe people aren't aware of this, is that when I wrote part one, I was going through chemotherapy. Right. And, I published that and defended that book and, had some issues with the bar and asked for voluntary disbarment. So I was no longer a member of the bar. And as I was kind of living my life, I was really trying to kind of, for lack of a better way of putting it, run away from the Jodi Arias experience, that connection, right, that I had, trying to redefine myself, that sort of thing. And I realized, through those years that it was something that I wasn't going to be able to run away from. And, added to the mix was the fact that, Miss Arias had filed a bar complaint against me that contained fictitious materials, fictitious assertions, and she made similar fictitious assertions in a lawsuit against me. And so eventually I got to the point where I realized I can't run away from this, and I had developed I did a one-man show up in Seattle a couple of years ago. Right. And kind of retweaked that and reworked that and started a a new one-man show called Overcoming Jodi Arias. It was set to debut in April in Arizona that got wiped out with the COVID and been delayed. Rambling a bit here, but all those things made me realize that, you know, and her appellate decision came down. I realized, you know what, it's time to publish. I'd done some writing on it years ago, and I'd done some writing on it more recently, and thought, you know what, her appeal was denied. She's continued to lie about me, continuing her pattern to go after men that she believes have wronged her. So I just simply decided to tell the rest of my story and kind of embrace that part of my life in a different way.
Right. Well, you probably had to complete it in order to move on completely, right?
I think so. I mean, you know, Al, you're a writer, and I, it can be, certainly writing certain books can be therapeutic. And I think for me, this was therapeutic to get my story out there. You know, you remember, you know, back in 2013, my name was Mud, and it stayed that way until, you know, and maybe is that way in a lot of people's minds based on some misunderstanding. So, you know, that was part of my motivation for writing the book, to impose truth upon her lies and her creation of those, many of those misunderstandings anyway. So, yeah, there was certainly a therapeutic element to, instead of running away, stepping back, connecting to it, and sharing my truth with the world, no doubt about it.
So, you know, when you look back and you look at the justice system, and even now, I see so many cases happen, you know, from making a murderer to this Miss Arias thing there's just so many cases that kind of hit the news and they become the popular item. Then all of a sudden, people start to come up with their judgments. It seems to be so, you know, like you said, you were slammed. People were really mean and rude. And you look at that happens in all these cases. People seem to pick out who's the good one and who's the bad one, and they have all these opinions and stuff. But yet they're not part of the case. They're not part of the full experience. They're just watching it on the TV or the internet, and then they can easily make their comments. Do you have a different opinion of how the justice system should portray itself and what they should allow on TV?
Well, you know, I do have concerns about the idea of, you know, cameras in the courtroom and what that means, because as your question kind of highlights, is this idea that when we have cameras in the courtroom and now we have live streaming and we have social media and we have a chance to just kind of, you know, it's like Mentos and 7-Up, right? You just put it in there and shake it up and it's ready to explode. And, you know, then that breeds that, you know, I use the analogy reality show TV. But, you know, a sporting event is a perfect analogy, too, because I remember when, you know, Arias was being sentenced and towards the end of the trial, people were dressing up in costumes and had signs like, you know, they would be going to a sporting event. So it is concerning that the pristine nature, maybe that's too strong a word, but, you know, trial should be sacrosanct in this country as I see it. And I do have strong concerns about the presence of cameras and what that means to justice, not only to justice, but to everybody that is involved in there. Because, you know, is justice restrained really justice if people are working out of with a sense of fear behind them?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not really into, I don't think they should have access, or they certainly shouldn't show it live. They maybe show it after the case is all done. It has too much of an effect, I think, on people, but that's my opinion. So,
well, and it's too enticing for someone like her, you know, who wants attention and wants to manipulate people and things. Can you imagine if Charles Manson's trial was shown on television, what it would have been like to watch him playing for the cameras the way she did?
Yeah, you know, and I always use the analogy, like, you know, I spoke at CrimeCon several years ago, And my postulation to the crowd where I spoke to was, what if OJ had an iPhone in the back of the Bronco and could tweet or could, you know, the whole dynamic would change. So to me, though, I mean, yeah, you're right. There's people could seek publicity for these things. People could garner attention, do interviews, that sort of thing. But there's also that aspect that social media makes it just all the more enticing for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They become all the more popular, and it becomes all the more of a cultural sensation. Now, do I think people are, you know, committing murders for that reason? No. But I think there are people like we saw, and I can't, his name's going to escape me now, the gentleman in Colorado, well, gentleman's a strong word, but Chris, Al might be able to remember his name, the guy who killed his kids in Colorado.
Chris Watts.
He was doing an interview. Watts, yeah. He was doing interviews before he was arrested, right? And so we do see this phenomenon that is associated with cameras in the courtroom that, because it is entertainment to some and is an avenue for fame to some as well.
Yeah, it's a deadly combination when you have that kind of media attention with a narcissist who's willing to do anything.
Yeah, it'll be the TikTok killer next. So Kurt, are you not, so would you ever go back into the legal profession or business, or are you sort of done with it now?
Well, in terms of actually practicing law, I'm done. When I wrote the first book and had the issues with the bar, they wanted to suspend me for 4 years, which is a term that would have expired, you know, this fall. But I made the choice. I said, no, I don't want to practice law anymore because I want to move my life in a different direction. I made a promise to myself when I went through chemotherapy, when I was enduring that I wasn't going to live my future days the way I had my previous days. And sticking to that promise to me meant cutting ties with the practice of law. Because if I fought the bar, because I think I was ethically justified in saying everything I said in part one of the book, if I fought the bar and won, then I would have an out. Then I wouldn't have to rebuild that life, right? I could just, you know, dink around for a few years. But I really wanted a new life and a new direction. And in that regard, one of the things I did a year or so back as I took the license to practice law that I had, this little thing, the certificate they give you, all gold embossed, and took it out of the frame and set it ablaze in order to kind of get rid of my old life and give rise to the new life. And so my legal work, if you will, is, you know, limited to commentary. I'm on Court TV, Law and Crime Network, different places like that, offering my opinion on different cases, but that's as far as I'm interested in going.
How is it for you now? How is it for you lately? When you make these public appearances and shows and stuff like that, when you're in the legal side, like Crime Con and things like that, how do you find people to be with you? Are they still angry? Or are they still kind of mean to you? Or is it kind of toned down?
I think it's toned down. There's still some that, you know, function under the misperception that, you know, I was Jody's attorney for fame or for money or for all kinds of things, or that I believed her story, which is, I always think I must have great acting ability if people believe that, right? But, you know, that, yeah, if Quentin Tarantino's listening, please give me a call. But, all those misperceptions are still out there because, you know, Al, no matter where I go and speak, and, you know, no matter how many shows I do, the amount of eyeballs and ears cast upon will never be as great as was the case when people were making that association with me as her attorney. But it's tempered down. People are starting to understand. You know, I did that Oxygen show in defense of, where we talked about the case, and hopefully, you know, between the two books on the issue, and hopefully when the world opens up, you know, performances are overcoming Jody Arias, they're going to get to see a different side of me, a more realistic side of me than what they saw in the courtroom.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, if you don't mind me jumping in here, about the social media aspect of that, because I remember when the case was going on, and even afterwards, years afterwards, if you stumbled across anybody on a Facebook true crime page talking about this case, there'd always be a handful of people who were convinced that she was innocent, that it was, you know, that Travis had been killed by, like, what was it, ninja assassins or whatever. And then, it, you know, they'd have some other theory. And then after the facts kept coming out, eventually it boiled down to, well, she may have done it, but he deserved it, which was just an outrageously ridiculous excuse. Have you encountered any of those kinds of people, or have you had any problems with them?
Not directly. You know, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I actually referred to them in my books as the cult of Jody, right? There are people that are so delusional that they believe whatever she's saying, they send her money, et cetera, et cetera. So, I get these things online. You know, I think the wackiest one I heard of was that somebody had posited the idea that Mr. Alexander was still alive and was living in the witness protection program. And then Jody was taking the fall for this, right? And something I certainly wish was true, but that he was still alive, but certainly not the case. But I haven't seen any of these people in their natural habitat, so to speak, out in the world. And quite frankly, I hope I never do. But look, it's, you know, it takes an interesting person. And look, I mean, she does a good job of reeling those people in and convincing them. I mean, look, I haven't checked, but my understanding through some of the appearances I've had and people that follow these things closely is that she's still selling art online, you know.
Probably,
so
yeah.
She's still, you know, and of course, you know, look, this isn't unique completely to, you know, Miss Arias. We see, you know, Ted Bundy got married during the middle of a sentencing hearing on a capital, you know, in his death penalty case. And, and you know, Charles Manson married too, I think. But, you know, so we see this all the time. And there are these people that, you know, want to be part of something that they conceive is bigger than themselves. And that, you know, that's one of the downsides of the publicity that's around some of these cases.
Well, and also, you know, I can understand some people who maybe have an emptiness in their life and are trying to fill it with some association to a case like this, but to pick somebody like Jody Arias, who's, in my opinion, she's obviously guilty. I don't know how any rational person could wrap their head around the idea that she's somehow innocent. You know, like when you were saying that she said lies about you and things like that, it's like, I guess some people are shocked that Jody Arias would lie. I'm not one of them. But when you look at the evidence that was used against her, you know, even if just something small, like a really difficult coincidence to swallow, like Travis being killed with a certain kind of rare caliber gun and that same kind of gun being stolen from, what was it, her grandparents' house and things like that. How do you address this idea that she was innocent or that she was somehow justified in killing Travis?
Well, I mean, I really don't. It's not my task. I don't know if I'm taking your question correctly, but it's no longer my task to do so. And I never believed it in the first place, right? You know, in my books, I lay out my theory that I had in 2013. And in a more recent book, I lay out my more recent theory. But, you know, what is really amazing that stands in defiance of all this disbelief is, if you recall, when she was finally sentenced in April of 2015, she had a chance to do what's called an allocution. She gets to address the judge and the entire courtroom. And if you recall, during that allocution, she said that Mr. Alexander was alive and when she slit his throat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meaning she in essence confessed to first degree murder. Mm-hmm. She'd already been convicted of it, but there she was in open court confessing to first degree murder, and people will still believe her.
Yeah, yeah. Shocking.
Well, no, not nowadays. All sorts of things going on out there. I mean, you know, the world's flat and we haven't been to the moon yet. So,
you know. Yeah.
So what do you hope people get? Like when they pick up this book and they read it, what is it you want them to come away with?
You know, a better sense of the trial, a better sense of, you know, some of the things that were going on maybe behind the scenes or some other realities that they might not see on TV. You know, everybody saw everything on TV, but they didn't really get a true sense. I don't think that paints the entire picture. It's one dimension of the case. So my hope is that those people that open the book, you know, hopefully Amazon's still shipping those books or opening their Kindles, and they'll get a better sense of the full dimension of the case, a fuller dimension of, you know, who I am, what was going on. And I think they'll get a pretty interesting detailed theory of what I believe happened on that fateful day. And they get to read my letter to Jody Arias.
Ooh.
Which is fun. Which is fun.
I put
for your listeners, they can go on my YouTube channel. I made a little I had a little cartoon made where I read a section of that letter to Miss Arias. It's a fun little 2-minute video.
There you go. Now, so you've been on this health kind of kick and mental health sort of thing, and you did that tour and book and stuff like that. Are you still doing that?
Well, obviously, everything's been clamped down for the past couple months. Right. But, yeah, I mean, my book, Defend Your Greatness, is still out there. I still try to do what I can to teach and inspire people. And you know, my first show that I did, one-man show, was called Infamy Cancer Life. And it dealt with, you know, dealing with some of the things of infamy and what I went through with cancer. But in overcoming Jody Arias, I'm telling a tale, I think, that I hope will inspire people with the things they need to overcome in their lives. You know, I think what I say is that, you know, we all have things to overcome. And I've overcome a couple of whoppers, and that's cancer and Jody Arias. And therefore, you might have a opportunity to learn a little something from me and get some laughs along the way. So that show is kind of my outlet now for inspiration. I'm writing some legal fiction right now, and my second work of legal fiction, and who knows what might be next. There might be more self-improvement stuff, and certainly I've been on a lot of shows and talking about that and making happiness a priority, which I think, you know, is a big important thing, because I think unhappiness is one of the biggest plagues facing so many of us in our country.
So which was worse, cancer or Arias?
I was going to ask, but I didn't want to.
Well, you know me.
I know, Al. It's your job.
They're both pretty bad, but here's what I say. Look, I could have called the show Overcoming Cancer, but I have to call it Overcoming Jody Arias, because more people associate me with her than being a cancer survivor. And I could cure the very cancer that plagued my body, and people would still say Jody Arias' attorney cured cancer. It wouldn't be Kirk Nermy cures cancer. So in that regard, Jody Arias is the bigger foe, because that is one that's going to stay with my life forever, that association. And that's the biggest thing I need to overcome moving forward.
Pretty amazing. And it's just kind of unusual. So have you had any reaction from her since the new book, or is it just sort of all shut down?
Well, yeah, the prisons, to my understanding,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Or whomever. But, you know, maybe when that's over, I might hear that. And, of course, you know, in Arizona now, she has a chance to, you know, continue her petition to the Arizona Supreme Court, and she also has a chance to file post-conviction relief petitions that basically say that I was ineffective in my counsel of her, which I'm looking forward to as well, because then people get a better understanding of why I was telling her story and that it indeed was her story. So I'm looking forward to that in many instances.
What a crazy situation. How is your health then? How are you doing with that?
Good. In February, I had a checkup. I had my annual scan, and I was clean, which was really good news, because a couple of years ago I had a concern that I had a nodule on my lung that had developed since chemotherapy. But we're all good. Everything is benign, and I'm about, you know, next February, I'm hoping to be able to declare that I'm cancer-free. But right now, I've certainly got aches and pains associated with, you know, chemotherapy and the joints and everything like that. But, you know, standing up, being above ground with those pains is much better than being in the ground. So overall, I'm doing quite well.
Were you a little worried about the COVID-19 and all that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, having a compromised immune system, it makes me, you know, more concerned about my safety, certainly. But, you know, at the same time, there's only so much it can do. And one of the things that I teach is one of the things that I've had to live is just understand that fear of anything, you know, being scared of COVID isn't going to keep anybody from getting it, right? And if you get COVID, you're not going to say, oh, my God, I'm glad I worried about getting it because now I'm more prepared to get it. No, you're not, right? And so we have to live our lives, and fear is one of the greatest combatants of happiness. And we have to live our lives in a way where we don't let fear control us, because then we can't really live the lives we're destined to lead. And I think that
just leads to unhappiness. So I'm doing my thing. I'm following the orders, but, you know, I'm not sitting in the corner with a mask on and a hazmat suit doing all that. I'm just living my life, doing the best I can. And, you know, fortunately, Alan, you're well aware of this, a writer's life is a hermit's life anyway. So yeah. one can function well in the home. And I'm maybe, us writers are a little more, psychologically prepared for the isolation than most.
Yeah, actually, I haven't had a big change other than I usually travel a little more to and from places when I'm researching or working. But, you know, people are overrated anyway. So,
I wouldn't agree with that. But, yeah, you know, it's certainly, you know, the travel and everything, it's Zoom comes in handy, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know. I'm just a mean old cranky person, so.
Don't anybody believe that.
Yeah, it's true. Miserable.
At least not the mean part.
Yeah. You know. Hey, you know, one thing I noticed was just here, what's this in December when I'm going through it? You put out a book called Sex Club Killer, was that right?
I did. Oh. That was my first work. A legal fiction. I know it even has sex in the title too. That's crazy. No, I put out put my first work of legal fiction out there. You know, I've always been kind of inspired by, the author Mickey Spillane. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, but he wrote a lot of kind of hard boiled crime novels.
One of the greats.
And, and of course, if you read them now with the 2020 vision that we have in 2020, you see that they're kind of sexist and things like that. But I thought, you know what kind of is putting it mildly, right? But I decided to put a more time appropriate spin on some of those and use that kind of inspiration, that hard boiled. Characters and life to bring it into the modern era. So Sex Club Killer was my shot at that, and I'm working on another one now.
Is it going to be a series of the same sort of people involved in the books, or all going to be different?
No, right now this one being my second one, this is going to be different. There's no overlap, if you will, yet, but certainly thoughts of having an ongoing theme have been in my head. We'll see. I always tell, we'll see what the story tells me it wants. So, you know, we just let the story feed itself, I guess, and see where I wind up.
Are you getting the ideas? Is it just comes from your imagination, or is it kind of a combination? Is it stuff you've dealt with or cases or other legal people you've met, or where does it come from?
Well, it's mostly imagination, I think. You know, the dictates of the story and how it's going to flow are all just things that just kind of flow through me. But having that basis in law, I think, adds an element of realism to those books, right? You know, because I've been there, I know that. So if my character is, you know, going to trial or is an attorney or something like that, I feel like I can draw on my experience in that regard, as opposed to I'm not in any way like retelling stories of cases gone by, if you will. They come from my imagination, but I can bring some realism to the situation because of my 15 years in the criminal justice system.
I'm just wondering, because that one, you have a character, Dr. Lorna Horton. Is that based on someone you know, someone you want to tell us about? Or
No, it's not. Oh. It's based on what came through my imagination.
Oh, that's too bad.
I know you were hoping for some juicy. Yeah. What answer were you hoping for, Al? Taylor Swift or somebody?
Yeah, Nancy Grace.
I should have said Taylor Swift and cut Al's reaction to that. Well, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Al would have ended the interview right there. Well, that's enough with Kirk Nerming. Thank you, guys.
No, we want to get more. No, we don't shy away from that stuff here. We get into
the dirt. All right.
Yeah, we get into the dirt. Ah, well, that's great. So, so what's next? Just more of these kind of crime books, or when things open up again, are you going to kind of go back on tour again and start talking about health and stuff like that, or?
Well, I think immediately when it comes out, like right now, in I'm was set in April to perform at a comedy club in Arizona called Stir Crazy, which was going to be my host for Overcoming Jody Arias, and we've backed that show up to August. And so I'm going to be kind of focused on that show, but I'm also going to do private, you know, speaking events. I've done speaks for corporations, you know, their conventions, meetings, and that sort of thing. So when we get back to that, I hope to deliver inspiration to those people and hopefully some laughs and some inspiration as well at the comedy clubs around the country with Overcoming Jody Arias.
When you do those comedy club, is that like a full-on comedy? Are you making jokes and all that stuff? Like, what's that show about?
Well, there's certainly some jokes. There's certainly some laughter, but it's not 90 minutes of stand-up. It's not, you know, Eddie Murphy, you know, up on stage type of thing, right? It's a story, but so it's a one-man show instead of a stand-up routine. But it's a story, but there's moments of laughter. I talk about my life a little bit before the trial, some of the humor behind the trial. There's some physical humor, if you will. And this, it's just a lot of fun to get up there and tell my story. And I think, you know, stories, telling stories, as us writers know, is one of the oldest forms of communication. And I just add some laughter to it. So we're not serious. So we're having fun because I think laughter brings hope to people that are dealing with tough circumstances and things they need to overcome. So, in between the comedy and in between the laughter, there's hopefully room is made for hope. And people have a good time and they take something out of the show as well. I think one of the biggest corollaries I would use is, you know, if you've ever seen Mike Tyson's one-man show, he tells the story of his life and there's some laughs involved in the way too. So it's very interesting, inspiring at times. And, you know, you get some laughs.
Mm. It's probably good for you too, right? In a way.
I think so. It allows me to, you know, present myself in a different light, to show a different side of me, to show some of those different dimensions that we talked about earlier that weren't shown during the trial. But more than that, you know, it's not a therapy session for me. It's a therapy session for everyone. It's fun therapy. It's like I say, it just gets into the root of the reality that we all have so many things to overcome that we can overcome if we look at things in the right way.
So here's the big question. So what do you think the most surprising thing about Jody Arias would be for people that they don't really kind of know about her?
Wow, that's a question I've never been asked before. And I don't know what the answer to that would be, and I'm not even not an attempt to be evasive, because there's so much that people know about Miss Arias. But I think one of the things, I guess, that maybe people, I think, have forgotten in the midst of all this, and this doesn't deal just with Miss Arias, it deals with the whole thing, and partially what we talked about earlier with the reality TV aspect. I think the tragedy of the whole event gets lost in when reality TV takes over and sporting events takes over, right? We have a sporting event or reality TV, somebody wins, somebody loses. But, you know, as it relates to her or Mr. Alexander, nobody wins. There's no winners, there's no losers. There's just such a tragedy involved. I mean, I say
Look, in Mr. Alexander, we have a beloved young man who lost his life. And in Miss Arias, we have a woman that was struggling, maybe dealing with some mental health issues that weren't yet defined, had no criminal history, and who threw her life away because there was no intervention. And so when I'm asked that question, I think about just the tragedy, not only to her, most prominently to Mr. Alexander, but to everyone involved, the friends, the family. There's just nothing but tragedy when we talk about the case. And I think that gets lost a lot. So I think rather than having some secret about things that people wouldn't know, it's important as we talk about this case to just remind ourselves of the tragedy of it all.
Well, I have a quick question here, Al, if you don't mind.
No,
You know, speaking of losers, last month, it was probably lost in the news for most people, but last month, Jodi Arias' conviction was upheld by the Arizona Court of Appeals, and most of us weren't surprised by that, but obviously, as you mentioned, she's going to keep appealing this. Do you think there's any chance that any court will ever overturn her conviction?
You know, it's hard to say, you know, what might motivate a court to overturn. And this is one of those areas where I don't want to get speaking to is it too
yeah.
much. But,
yeah.
you know, if you read the court's opinion, it was seemed like it was well-reasoned. It wasn't fly by night. But, you know, even as her former attorney, I don't want to speak against her. I'm certainly not obligated to speak for her. Mm-hmm. But I would find it, you know, shocking if Miss Arias actually wound up in a courtroom again, apart from her attempts to claim my ineffective assistance of counsel, which, like I said earlier, I'm looking forward to having that battle, and I hope the cameras are rolling.
Yeah, the court pretty much said that the evidence against her was pretty solid, and there was no reason to consider it. So I hope that continues.
You had a co-defense counsel. Have you ever spoke with her since the trial? Or
well, I think I'd like to keep those, you know, relationships private, if you will.
Okay, not a problem. I just and one other thing: the with the gossip and the people that have conspiracy theories, like. Saying Alexander is still alive in protection. Where do you think that comes from? Like it's laughable, but where do you think that comes from and why does it catch on?
You know, I really don't know. You know, like you mentioned people that believe the earth is flat, right?
Yeah.
I don't know where that comes from. And you know, the number eludes me now as we're talking, but you know, there are thousands of people that believe the earth is flat, right? I forget what the number is. There's, you know, I don't really know other than I do think there's a level of acceptance and camaraderie that comes with people that share these beliefs and they can believe that they are special and unique and are the only ones that understand this. I guess that's somewhat of a need that's being fulfilled by that, but you know, it's that connection, I guess. I don't know. What do you think, Al?
Well, you know, with the flat earth and things like that, you get, you know, I think they have 300,000 membership. But those people have a huge distrust for, you know, the government and agencies and things like that. I just find that with the crime thing, it's sort of bizarre because... You know, he was slaughtered by her, and we pretty much know that. So you can have a distrust for government or the police or whatever. So I find that kind of to be very bizarre to think, well, he's still really alive.
Well, isn't there a certain amount of cognitive dissonance that comes into that where it's like it starts off with the assumption that she's not the bad guy, that she's somehow innocent? And then more and more evidence starts to pile up that that's not true. And then they have very few outs, you know. They start to see there's only a few ways to keep this idea alive. And one of them is this ridiculous notion that he's still alive. I mean, there's pictures of her killing him. So I don't know how they get around that. But.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Because I was just going to say that I think there is a, you know, it's an admission that you're wrong, right? Like, I think, like, even when I come out and people understand more about me and they don't see me in that intensely negative light, they don't want to believe it because they don't want to believe that they were wrong in the first place.
Right.
And that's kind of what you're talking about. So they assume that they don't want to believe they're wrong in the first place. They don't want to admit it. So they will contort reality like, you know, if they don't believe me, anything I've said in the book, they said, well, I'm changing. I'm selling out. I'm doing this. I'm doing that because they don't want to believe that they're wrong. And sometimes, you know, whether it's ego or what it is, we have a hard time believing we're wrong when we make these impressions about people. We've cast our lot, and we don't want to be considered to having made a mistake.
Yeah, only I am never wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, so now, Kirk, do you have a website or a place that people can find you?
I do. You can go to KirkNermy.com or UnchainedLives.com. KirkNermy.com has a link up to all my books, the Arius books, the personal development books, and the legal fiction book that we were talking about earlier, Sex Club Killer. They're all there, all available on Kindle. So those folks that are barricaded within their houses can easily get that and enjoy some of their time in quarantine by reading those books.
Fantastic. Now, we're going to have that linked up as well, so people on our website or on our app can just do one click and find you and find your books. So that's all set. Now, our guest has been Kirk Nermy, and we're talking about his new book. And it's his final words, and it's Trapped with Miss Arius. Thanks a lot for being here, Kirk.
You bet. Gentlemen, I enjoyed it greatly.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com. houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.